Before that, someone could have given so much bayan that this country tried it, that country tried it, that country tried it, no one got it. That one word of the muhaddith that Allah's Nabi said, you're going to get it. And then the second he would say, and Allah's Nabi said, what an amir, what an army. And then the Khalifa would say, who's ready to go? And everyone would stand up. At that time, Abu Ayyub Ansari radiallahu anhu couldn't walk. He had a lump. He got the message that the army is going to Constantinople. He told his family, let me go. I'm not going to stay behind just to be in that wording. And Abu Ayyub Ansari radiallahu anhu passed away there. And if you go there, you'll visit the area where he's buried. And you'll see what a ruhaniyat one sahabi can give out. Just in that town when you enter, some modern land. But when you just come onto his small plot, you just feel a fragrance of iman. Now it's different, now after this coup things will change. But when you went there, I never saw any place selling burqa, except the one which is called like Asal Fatih. It's a small area where Sheikh Mahmood Afundi has done a lot of work. Otherwise, nowhere you see burqa. But when you land at the area where Abu Ayyub Ansari is buried, they call him Sultan Iyub. So you don't even know like what is Sultan Iyub. But that man who got no dressing of sunnah, and that girl who just got married, and she wants to show off her beauty to the world, and the European in nature completely. But they also got so much of respect for Abu Ayyub Ansari radiallahu anhu. That they got married. The first place to go after you get married, go to the masjid of Abu Ayyub Ansari. That auntie with no scarf, she puts on a small scarf also. And she goes on one side and she stands and says, as though, oh my father, make dua for me and him. The child is born, you're going to make tahniq and you're going to slaughter and you're going to call aqiqah. We saw the people bringing the child there also. For one dua. What a feeling when you stand at that cover. It's like, you'll have to be there to understand that there is a certain fragrance that sahabi is pushing out in that land. And how Allah, what power Allah blessed sahaba radiallahu anhu with. That was in the 58th year of Hijri. The Muslims at that time got such a defeat because of one of the Greek fire. In the time of Muawiyah radiallahu anhu, they were just winning wars. But they landed here. And there was such a defeat. And it was the first time that he had to send the message to the army, come away. And on the return, the enemy chased them. And again they knocked their ship. There was a second defeat. And they say that when they reached, the entire army would have been like devastated. Would have said, we'll never try it again. That was in the 58th year of Hijri. But they say the only thing in history ever happened was the Muslim Ummah. That the next Khalifa came, Sulaiman bin Abdul Malik, in the 98th year of Hijri. If you think the difference between 58 and 98, the people whose fathers passed away there, they now hearing the Khalifa saying, let's go again. Normally you will say they went already, they couldn't make it, who are you going to make it? All he needed was he called the Muhaddith of the time. He said, then narrate the hadith, he said, wa la ni'ma al-amir, wa la ni'ma al-jaysh, the whole army, who's ready? Everyone is ready. Second army has gone out, 98 year of Hijri. And they left now the Muslim armies that went, army after army after army. Until came the time of Harun al-Rashid. And then he also was going out and the Roman queen, she made a truce with him. And at that time there was a lot of truces with the Romans. And they said that now we will not. And from that time the Muslim Ummah never went forward in their wars. Then came what was known as the Ottoman Empire. And it's a long history how it was established. But in this Ottoman Empire, a time came where there was a man called Sultan Murad II. And you can only understand what I'm saying now if you visit Istanbul and make an intention to visit the lands of Islam and show your children. We ourselves never understood what was Khilafat. You want to see it, you'll have to go in the top kapi, move in the thing to understand this was the seat of the Khilafat. They ruled the world, the armies were coming here, the ulama were coming here. This delegation was coming, that delegation was coming. The European Western world was coming and they were in awe. But what was the Muslim power at that time? And Allah is going to give it back. So it's just a few years before. So in that Sultan Murad II, he is blessed with a son. Choosing the name for the son, because the son was born on the 27th of Rajab. So on the 27th of Rajab, if you get a son, you name him Muhammad. So the natural. And they had a lot of argument for Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, this Ottoman Empire, for Quran and for Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So much of argument that when the Ottoman Empire was finally given the Khilafat, first there was just what was calling state. But once when the Khilafat was handed, so the last Khalifa of the Abbasi, he said, because now I recognize you all as the next Khalifas of the Muslim world. Whatever what we call tabarrukat of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam we have by us, which was kept in the land of Iraq, because that was the Khilafat. He sent it over. When the Khalifa received it, they had so much of azmat for Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. When the Khalifa received it, that night went in the thought, how will I honor this tabarruk? There was the hair, and there was the tut, and there was other things of Rasulullah, the shawl, and the shawl of Fatima radiallahu anha, and you will see it there. Some they show, some they don't show. Some you just know it's in the box. And even that, just the things of Rasulullah gives it fragrance of Iman. If you visit the Topkapi Museum, then we don't go into the whole museum because it's all Western. But when you go there, you just go for the Islamic heritage. Or if you want to walk in the Western part first, where they show you the gold of the Ottoman empires and the beddings and all that, and everyone gets thrilled, it's so much gold, and they start working it out, how much money? But you see, Western world got no attraction. So you just look at it, you look at it, and then you come into what is called the sacred chamber, they call it. As you enter that sacred chamber, you see the lights are dim also. And I saw that non-Muslim, because on the trip I look at a lot of non-Muslims around me, how they view Islamic things. When that non-Muslim entered with me, I saw him also humbled, as though he was crying. And we're looking at what they're saying is the hair of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And for him, I'm wondering, what it got to do with him? He must be thinking his people are honoring a hair. But when I looked at him, the way he was looking at it, I said, even that hair gives out the fragrance of sunnah. What a power in it. So to honor this thing, he's thinking how to honor it. So he put it in a certain room. And he made a law that there will always be someone reading Quran in this room. Not 5 hours or 10 hours, always. So throughout the entire Ottoman history, day and night, there was someone reading Quran in that room. Something to think about. And when Mustafa Kamal came, he stopped it. And now it started again. But I don't think it's the whole day. Maybe it's the whole day. Who knows? But when you enter first, I thought it's a tape recording. I said, now who's going to be reading Quran? And then you enter, then you see the Qari there. And he's reading. And as he's reading, he's going in the whole room. In the sacred chamber. One man reading Quran. And you got that environment. Imagine how much Quran was read in that spot. So this is a land to understand what it is. So he had a son, Muhammad. The father had so much of hope on the son, that they said at the young age, he had his son sent to a madrasa, he memorized the entire Quran. Then he began studying ahadith. He became a faqih. He taught him maths, he taught him astronomy, but the main thing, he taught him how to fight. In teaching him how to fight, his father wanted to teach him how to rule. So at a young age of about 8 years old, he told him, you in charge of the state. Now think of this age, 8 years old. He wasn't going to play games there. He was told, you in charge of a state. When he came to the state, the best of the ulama which the father thought he had, he sent them with the boy. So among them, there was this great sheikh who is known as Sheikh Shamsuddin. This must have been a wali of his time. Because they say at that young age, he looked at Muhammad. Now imagine from the time when Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said, you will one day conquer Constantinople. Already 800 years have passed. 855 years. So you start losing the dream of ever getting that land. This man looks at this Muhammad and he says, that something tells me you are the one who has been mentioned in the ahadith. Now, what a man he must have. Because he said that, and the word Muhammad wasn't mentioned in the hadith. No name was mentioned. No sign was mentioned. But his ustad was just given that inspiration. He said, it's going to be you. So from the age of 8, the boy is already dreaming of Constantinople. At the age of 10, his father was the Khalifa, the Ottoman Emperor. The father says, I retire. So they ask, who is going to rule the world? He says, my son, even 2 years he is running. He's 10 years old, bring him. At the age of 10, this boy sits on the throne of Khilafah. Age of 10. Now imagine, what a young boy. And he's ruling. The only problem came after 2 years of rule. But he had the chance now to rule for 2 years at what a young age. After 2 years of rule, because of his young age, the own people in the parliament, people outside were very happy, but the own people in the parliament, they started creating problems. So this young boy, now when you dare, you have to go visit a certain museum, not the Top Kapi Museum, there's another one. It is called Panorama. 1458 or something. So there they have the letters that he wrote, this young Muhammad. So the one letter that caught my mind was he wrote a letter to his father, because he told his father, problems are happening in the center. The people inside the parliament, they're not happy with me. So now he's telling his father, you must come out of retirement and come back home. But how will a young boy write to his father? So he writes it in this manner. He says, oh my beloved father, from a begging son, I ask you to please leave your life of retirement and come back and sort out the matters that have been put on your shoulders by Allah. You can't retire and leave me in this position. He says, oh my beloved father, from a begging son, please come back. And then he skips a line or something and then he writes there, if you are not ready to comply, then from the Khalifa of the Muslim world to an ordinary layman, I order you to get up and come and sit here. What a young boy. But when you read that letter, the word is something else. He divided it. With respect of a son, he said, with the authority of the Khalifa, come, the father had to come back. And he handed it over. So now the next 8 years, now at the age of 20, his father now passes away. So he had the chance to live as a Khalifa, and to see where he made mistakes. And at the age of 20, now he sits. They say from the time of sitting, the people around him say, we cannot remember one majlis, except that he would ask the people around him regarding Constantinople. He said he had like an urge or an allergy for it. Like how you have an addiction, only dreaming of it. But now at that time they were not the Khilafat. We're calling him Khalifa, but it means he was emperor. Something hard to explain to you. Later on they got the Khilafat. The Khilafat was like a dead Khilafat in Iraq. It was doing nothing, they were doing everything. But they were not taking the name of Khalif. They were doing law, the empire was spreading far. But because you're not the Khalifa, you can't order anyone in the Muslim world that we're going for this land, you all must come. So now he thinks about how to invite the armies of the different lands, because I'm not the Khalifa. They will tell you, a normal man, you Turkey, you got this place, your place, in your empire, whoever wants to fight. Why from outside you calling? So he thinks with the scholars, how to get the whole Muslim world 835 years after the statement of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. The scholars say that we will do. And it's written, their letters are also there. The ulama that were given the job, in their letters, all they had to do was narrate the one hadith of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. وَلَنِعْمَ الْأَمِيرُ أَمِيرُهَا. What a wonderful Amir, but what a wonderful army. And then they will write, are you ready to be part of this army? And from the world, soldiers start coming. Pouring. They're not the, this is not the Khalifa, but the honor of that words of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. If I can somehow get in, and so much of conviction, already 800 years have gone, but if my Nabi said it's going to happen one day. So the army start coming. He has thought a lot about what happened in the past, what mistakes were made in the past. So he prepares. In the preparing, he has his cannons made. It was the first time that cannons were going to be used in war. Because it was Constantinople, it had walls. So you had to break through the wall. The walls were not like our small walls. These were walls like mountains. That's why it will never be put up again, those walls. Made out of rock, and rock, and rock. So one of the cannons that were made for him, he had a unique German engineer. And this person brought a lot of cannons. But there was one cannon which they still have there. which was the cannon of that war. And when you go inside this panorama, it's called Panorama 1458. It's not by the top copy, it's quite a distance away, you must look for it. And many people there, for some reason, don't even know what you're talking about. But it's a unique place. When you visit this panorama, the entire two floors is to teach you about what happened in the war. But when you come on that last, upstairs, the highest, they enter you in the war. They have made that scene such that when you just come in there, you think I'm in the war. The painting around you is like real. And you can hear the cannon going boom. And you look this side and you see the whole Muslim army. The flags are real. It was the one place that for half an hour I just stood turning around and around and around. See that army, and you see that army, and you see someone fighting there. You see one soldier falling down there. And that one falling down there, then the horse is going over this person. And then you will understand what was war in that era. What a thing it was, but you have to be there to understand that. So in that place, they got that cannon there. The cannon is not a picture, the real cannon is there still. And why that cannon was so unique? It was the only one made of that size. And the man who made it was a non-Muslim. But because the Khalifa had hired his expertise, so when he made it, the other engineers told the emperor, the Khalifa, the what you will call the Sultan, that it's not going to work this thing. It has been made too big. So when this thing is going to blow, the whole thing will blow up. It will not manage that weight. And that man said he'll do the job. And Almighty Allah made both happen. That it only shot, I think, three. On the third bang that went, it made that hole which later on became the reason for the conquest. And on that third bang, it blew. And the man who made it was standing next to it, he died. So what they said also worked, they said he's going to blow. And he told the Khalifa, he'll do your job, and he did the job. So because that cannon did its job, they kept it there up till today. And this cannon finally made that hole. So it had its place in history. So now they went out. The war was a unique war. The Christians already were ready. They said enough armies have come. They put up the things. The Muslims went. Before I went, I thought it was like a 1 day or 2 day war. They just landed there, they did some things and they took over. It's only when you get there you will understand. They say on the 6th of April 1453, this war began. It would last for 1 month, 3 weeks and 2 days, meaning 2 months. So it started on the 6th of April, fighting, going in, coming out. You can't get in. You're in the waters, you're being knocked. Greek fire is hitting you. You're putting up this, you're putting it. Made so much of preparations. But in the beginning, 15 days, from the 6th to the 20th, on the 20th, there were certain failures that his army saw. He said, was this failure, meaning after many failures, the Ottoman Empire lost its morale and showed the signs of defeat. Ottoman soldiers started defecting from the army. Soon the Byzantine Emperor wanted to take advantage of the situation and he said, I can see your armies are running. So he sent that let's make peace and you won't fight again. In Sultan Muhammad, later on he was known as Muhammad Fatih, in his now cabinet he calls the people for Mashwara. So much of preparation. So the people of the cabinet, the top ministers tell him that whatever happened, happened, but we must sit. And it's not going to happen. 15 days, so many have died already, let's go. And the army is going. They say that night he's in a parishan condition. His whole dream is, can I get this land? And now he sees his army is going. And he also starts going into what people call like a depression. So at that time, this was also one letter I read. But it's in their language, then you have to get a translation. His sheikh, who started with him when he was a young boy, Sheikh Shamsuddin, now he must be quite old. He gets the message that the Sultan Muhammad is also showing signs of giving in. So he writes a letter. And he writes with respect to the Khalifa. And because he was like the sheikh and that was his murid, then he wrote in a very harsh tone after that. He wrote that when the Rasul of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said one day someone is going to get this land, then definitely one day someone will get it. If it's not going to be you, it's going to be someone else. So don't be a coward today, carry on. And they said, because of that wording, and he put that letter down, and he said, I'm not giving up. Whole night he's walking up and down, up and down, up and down. Say Allah Tabarakullah inspired him that night. Whether a dream or a plan, which they said never in history from the time of Adam alayhi salam was ever done and perhaps will never be done after that. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had once upon a time spoken deep about this conquest. But in the conquest he mentioned one word which perhaps its meaning was never understood. He said when the Muslim armies will reach Constantinople, they will find the only barrier for them is water, the ocean. And this was the golden horn, they needed to get in. But there will be chains there. The hadith never mentioned there will be chains, but there was going to be chains there. You couldn't get in. The hadith mentioned they will find a barrier of water. And suddenly the army will find that the water will dry up for them. And they will go over land and they will come with their ships into the city. So whoever read that hadith would think that one day, like how Musa alayhi salam, he found the water just drying. And they always had, when will the ocean dry? That night Allah Tawarukala inspired this Muhammad. So he goes out in the late hours of the night and he tells his soldiers, start cutting trees. It's dark, you can't see anything from the land away. They can just see lights moving, but far away. No one will ever dream. Mufti Muhammad Taqi Usmani says, I went and I visited the place where they cut the trees. I read about it in history, but when I saw it, I still said it's impossible, it could never have been done. They cut the trees of that mountain slope. They made a path. Now they're asking him, what you need trees for? He said, make the trees like logs. Because logs can roll. Then he said, bring oil, bring grease. And he greased those logs. Now they're asking, what you going to do with logs? So he said, where's my oxen? Where's my men? You're bringing 1,000 men. He's giving them rope. He tells them, fasten that ship onto your back. The oxen are going to be pulling that ship. The wheels of that ship is now logs. And as that logs will turn, I will take it over the mountain. But you will only understand it if you see that picture one man painted in that era, where you will see thousands of men and oxen, one ship they're pulling. And as they make one pull, and you have someone saying, Allahu Akbar, and everyone pulls, and that ship moves slowly. Because it's moving over 3 kilometers of mountain. One ship. In one night he took 70 ships. Going, climbing mountain. Mufti Taqi Usmani on death he wrote, that I read this lot, but when I saw that mountain I said it could never have been done. How do you take a ship over rock? Rock, moving. One, Allahu Akbar. Now the next morning, the Roman world wakes up and they see sliding down the mountains coming ships. Now it was much easier now because now they just got to control the ship, mustn't go too fast down. So controlling it and it's sliding. And as it's sliding, they have reached, they went, here was the chain. And after that is land. So around the chain they went. They went up the mountains. They went down the mountains and now they landed up far away from the chain. Now the first Muslim ship starts landing. The Roman ship starts attacking. Now the attack takes place. Now the war started. We always thought the war ended there. The war only now started. Now you're not inside the city still. You're only by another wall. But because now the Romans, for the first time in history, they have to defend two sides. They never knew someone could ever come through the side. So the army divides. And now the cannons are brought. Bridges are put up. And now the war starts. And in that war again, so many Muslims passed away. That again the time came where the emperor said, let's stop it. You're not going to get into the city. And again the people are saying, let's just go back. And the Sultan saying, we're right here now. And then the message comes that the Roman world has sent out their ships already. And how much is coming? And now the army starts saying, we're not going to win. And they say, Sultan Muhammad that night, after making so much of dua, that I never wrote there, but when I was there and I read, that night he's pacing up and down, looking at his soldiers. And he's irritated. So then he says, where's so and so? That so and so was his mufti, his sheikh. Now he's the sultan, although that's his sheikh, but he's the sultan. So he's angry, he said, where's he? Go and call him. So someone comes and says he said his tent. And he said that no one must enter the tent. So the Sultan said, I'm calling him. That man said that we're not going to call him. So the Sultan goes himself. There's one guard at the tent. The guard says, I've been told not to allow anyone inside. So he says, everyone doesn't know the Sultan. You hardly get a chance to meet him. He says, I am Muhammad. And as the Sultan of this, I tell you, move out of my way. And they say, he enters the tent and he finds his sheikh in sajda. Just crying. And he looks at that. He never thought. He's wondering, where is he missing? And he just looks at that and he goes out and he says, make sure no one enters the tent. That sheikh must have made so much of dua in that posture. And Sheikh Sultan Muhammad now walks in his soldiers. On the other side, they are celebrating in the Roman Empire that help is already coming. And they have taken out the Virgin Mary and said, Mary looks after the city. No one has taken over for so long. We will defeat them. They are having their party. And Muhammad, he walks amongst his soldiers. And again, that same narration he repeats. And they say, when he read that, وَلَنِعْمَ الْجَيْشُ ذَٰلِكَ الْجَيْشُ, that what a wonderful army that will be. He says they broke into tears. To understand the power of that word, the next day when he gave the command, fight, he said two things spurred them on. One was the Sultan on his horse was in the front line of the war. All those arrows are coming, but when they saw Sultan Muhammad moving in the front, and they said what he had is what you call like, you have your top bodyguard. They gave their life to make sure the Sultan is not harmed. So all of them are moving and arrows are raining. Everyone is getting knocked. And you will understand what it means to give life. And now they found a hole there. But to get into the hole, one body has to go. The first body that's going to enter that hole, and many places now there's entrances, but the first body that's going to enter is going to get knocked with a rock, or with an arrow, or with fire, and he's going to fly out. So who will say, I'll be the first body? But on that day, before the thing started, you already had your 100 people coming front. And we say, we are martyrs for Allah. Martyrs means we're the first at going in. So whoever wants to kill, kill us. And that army goes, and they take that entire knock. And behind them is another army, that their dead bodies, the shields. And they stoning and they firing and that army like that is moving. And only when you see it you will understand. So there's one town there, it's called Ulubati. Whenever you move in a train they say, we reached Ulubati, we reached Ulubati. So Ulubati was Hassan Ulubati. He carried the flag that day. And when he managed to gain entry, and he put the flag down, so on that they even got like a small drawing of Hassan Ulubati with the flag. As that flag hit, there must have been about 50 arrows that went through his body. And he put it down. And when that flag flew, then the whole Allahu Akbar went that way in. And then the defeat then started. Finally the emperor was killed. And it was a unique after that, how he came, how he entered. And exactly when Rasulullah s.a.w. entered Makkah Mukarramah as conqueror, when Muhammad Fatih entered, they said the whole Constantinople was crying. Because three times before that he told them, give up and I'll allow you to go free. And you take whatever you want. And they never gave up, three times. So many of his soldiers now had died because they were stubborn. Now when you enter, you're supposed to enter and say revenge. So they got his speech written there also. And they said that speech made that entire Christian world fall in tears. They were already crying. They understood we are going to be slaves. And they say, when he entered with the look of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam the day he entered Makkah Mukarramah. And as he entered, he told his soldiers, not a single one of you will touch anything unless I give permission. And he said, they entered with that adab, that respect. And the first speech that he gave, a small amount when I was there, I wrote it. As he entered, his soldiers were screaming, Muhammad al-Fatih, Fatih means the conqueror, Muhammad al-Fatih, MashaAllah, MashaAllah, long live our Sultan, long live our Sultan. And the entire procession, and you have to see how the processions come. That group went, and another group, and then the Ottoman Empire, Emperor is coming. It was a unique thing, now with that pomp, but a man who stumble walks in. And when he walks in, he comes out of his horse, dismounts from his horse, and before addressing the crowd, he performs two rakats. And he says, he thanks Allah who had blessed him with this conquest. Then he speaks to the people of the city who are still in tears. And the bayan, the speech he gave was a little long, but the one sentence I wrote, he said, I am Sultan Muhammad, and I would like to tell you, your brothers and all your people present, that your lives and your freedom has been protected by me. He said, everyone was shocked. And then he told, whoever has been captured, I want all to free them. He said, if anyone wants fidya, that money must be given for his capture, I will pay that fidya. He started paying. Then he went into the church. The church is what we call today, what Constantine built at that time to say to Sulaiman alayhi salam, I beat you. It's today called the Hagia Sophia. So he entered the church. And he said, in the next 3 days, Juma, we will perform Juma here. But the church was filled with mosaic paintings. You got mosaic in your bathroom, you know how hard it is to put that small amount. When you go to Turkey, you'll understand, they would make huge paintings with mosaic. That church was filled. You got this angel there, that angel, maybe Jibreel alayhi salam, Mikael alayhi salam, they got the angel. You got Mary there, and you got Jesus here, and the whole thing is filled with mosaic. And he says, in 3 days' time, we're making Jumaya. So his people ask him, how can you make Juma with so much of? So he had such architects that in 3 days, without harming that mosaic at all, they were able to make such unique coverings that when you look at it today, you will see like a flower. You will never know that once upon a time this was meant to be Murat. When Mustafa Kamal came, he was burning with this. So he told his people, of Mustafa Kamal came how many years later with technology on its height. He told his people, remove all the covering. So if you ever go there, look at the walls. And you will see in every spot they tried here. And when they realized they're failing, they went there. They failed there, they went there, because they were spoiling the original mosaic. So you see, they tried there, they couldn't get it. They tried there. In that now Hagia Sophia, they managed to open up. But only a few. Because that architect that he had at that time was so masters that they did such a thing to that thing that the people can still not uncover it. And they can't open up that murat. So only a few are there. The masjid is there. They perform the Juma Salah. So there was a long story. I took you through a whole conquest. Now we'll have to go much faster. But before that, when I was there, I read in the narration that Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that when they will take over, they will build unique masajid. Amazing, I said, in the narration, the whole ummah built masajid. Here we got a unique masjid. But what is the purpose that Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam must speak specially about their masajid? Ottoman masajid. So it's just that thought one day was in my mind, and that day Allah Taala made it that somehow we landed up at what is called the Sulaymaniya Masjid. And this one also perhaps is not so famous, because whoever goes there goes top copy and that's all. So Sulaymaniya Masjid is like the biggest masjid in that entire Istanbul, and if you go, but you need a guide or someone to tell you this, or if you heard it from me, then look at that masjid. The Sulaymaniya Masjid was built by what was called Sulaiman the Great, Sulaiman the Magnificent. He came about 8 after Muhammad al-Fatih. He was like the highest now of the Ottoman Empire. And after it, then he started declining. He took it to its height. So every Khalifa that came now, before passing away, would build up a masjid for the world to remember him. One masjid or many. There was a certain architect, his name was Sinan. The Western world today call him Sinan. Up till today, they know him as the master architect of the world. So he calls us Sinan and he says to him that, I'm going to pass away. I want to be remembered, so can you put up such a masjid that leaves a message to the world? So Sinan said, no problem, we put up unique masjid. He said, your masjid must match the Hagia Sophia. Now the Hagia Sophia was put up by Constantine, was the might of the Roman Empire. It took them, perhaps because Constantine died, so it must have taken them 20 to 30 years to put it up. And now the Sinan is being told, you must match it. So normally Sinan will say that, you know, that you're asking too much. So Sinan says that the Hagia Sophia got too many flaws in. Too many errors. So I'll never build my masjid like that. What a sentence it was. So the Khalifa asked, what floor's that court? That was put to Met Sulaiman alayhi salam. He said, I'll point them out for you. So he did point them out. But the Khalifa was not happy. He said, it must match it. And he wasn't happy. And he said, I don't want to spoil my masterpiece. And they had this. But in the ending, the Khalifa is the Khalifa. And he said, I give you a few years, you put that thing up. He thought 10 years. And 10 years to match something that was put up by the Roman Empire was no little time. But because Sinan was stubborn also, he never did it. And after 10 years, the Khalifa wants to know, is the work done? And the people start telling him, that man took the money and is gone. Because not a single rock has been moved. And now they write that he comes and he speaks to Sinan and he says, the people have said that you are going to run away tonight. And Sinan says, nothing lad, he says, I don't want to do it. And they have that argument and they say in anger, Sinan says to him that, the way you're making Aga Sophia, I'll put it up in 3 months. And in 3 months he put it up. He said, when he said that there, everyone around him said, you've gone out of your mind. But they said he put it up in such a manner that whatever mistake was in the Hagia Sophia, he made sure it never happened in his, although the Khalifa can't pick up the difference between the two. That's why you need an expert to tell you, you see, that one is like this, this one got a shape like this. So the problem that came here won't come here, but that we won't understand. What we will understand, remarkable of this masjid is few points. When I entered the masjid, that person, guide was speaking, so I was listening. The guy said, Sinan showed his expertise in building with a couple of things in this masjid. There's a lot of things, but I'll mention few points you can understand what was this. And for what reason, Nabi also mentioned unique masajid they will put up. So he said, in this masjid, they said, Sinan was well known for taking many things into consideration. One thing he took into consideration was, he said, after completion of the masjid, someone told the Sultan that your Sinan is wasting time in the masjid. He asked, what is he doing? He said, he's smoking hookah, pipe. So he couldn't believe that. So he comes in the masjid and he sees Sinan right in the front blowing bubbles. So he looks like he's smoking. So he sees you like a small child, you. So Sinan looks up to him and says, what? He says, you think I'm just blowing bubbles? I'm testing the sound effects of my masjid. Because they have no mic. But in the walls he put open air ducts. You'll understand it if you're in that masjid and a small child in the back running and making, ha. That ha echoes in the whole masjid. So he said, I'm testing my sound effects. That if it hits from here, that sound, how it will go around the whole masjid. That's one. And unique things in those masajids, like see this masjid got pillars. So if you're sitting behind the pillar and the best place to sit, because you can sleep. But you can't see the speaker. In those masajids which are so big, wherever you are, you can see the speaker. There will never be a pillar in front of you. So anyway, when you're there, you'll understand how can it be something like that. But they made it such, wherever the speaker is, the whole masjid is for him. There's no barrier in between. They say he took into consideration that there will be 275 candles in this masjid, which needed to light up the place at night. Candle attracts normally insects. Mosquitoes will come. Other insects will be flying around. Then they will fall, they'll burn, they'll fall down dead. So after every six, I think, the seventh one, you won't pick it up. Someone has to point it out to you. It's not like the normal six. It's an ostrich egg. And in the ostrich egg, a certain ether was made to burn. That ether, an insect can never stand it. So because of that ether, these six and those six are protected. And then the whole masjid would never get a single insect moving it. Because he had that ether moving around. But the kamal of his was two, which I really was fascinated. One was he knew that there will be so much of the candles burning, that you're going to get wax falling. That's to fall. So he built the walls in such a degree and the windows that the wind blows at such an angle that it carries that wax to another ledge on the other side. And it lands on that ledge and then they would gather that wax and they would make ink with it. It's beyond the mind that the wax would never fall onto carpet or whatever was there. It would fly in the air. Wind would blow it, and what an angle. And they would use it for ink, that was one. And perhaps the kamal of his sinan was understood when they found this. 1950. 1950 is going to be when they were, the Ottoman Empire was on its furuj, that was what we call 1480. In that time, 1400. Then you have 1500, 1600, 1700, 1800, 1900. Now you got 1950. Mustafa Kemal had come, everything had been finished. So in 1950, one brick, what is called a locking brick, moved out of place in his masjid. So immediately the people were told that this masjid is in need of repairs. And if you don't sort it out, then this entire thing is going to come down. Sinan Masjid, they say, it stood through earthquakes and through fire. It never got. Normally an earthquake comes, you see the crack. His masjid held an earthquake. The cracks never came. But in 1950, this locking brick came out. So they say that those people who were put in to put the thing back in place, he says in the 50s when the Sulaymaniya Masjid was undergoing repairs, maintenance workers found a message written in Ottoman Turkish. Meaning when they went up there with the scaffolding to put the thing, they found something was written. There was a date, there was a signature, but they couldn't read it because it was in old Ottoman. So they stopped the maintenance work. They had people brought who can, what is called, trans-literate,